Good morning. Few of us have had the chance to interact firsthand with the foreign fishermen whose working conditions have been the subject of the Associated Press investigation. Today, we'll talk with a man who regularly engages them. Pastor Jerry Saludas joins us later this hour. And on this Halloween Monday, tricks and treats may be truncated for many families because it's a school night. But what if Halloween were designated as the last Saturday in October? There's a petition for that. Joy Gillen tells us about it. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And I'm Chris Vandercook. Halloween wouldn't be quite the same without a good ghost story, and we knew just the man to ask. Jeff Geer is with us in our studio. And the 2016 Hawaiian Media Makers Conference will bring together local and national representatives to look at shared goals and opportunities.
It's a Monday, October 31st, Halloween. Those conversations and a few more right after this news.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks, gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein.
Somebody must have been at my house last night. Werewolves of London getting us off for a Monday and a Halloween at that.
Not the last reference to werewolves we're going to be hearing today.
Likely not, but good morning and welcome to the conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich.
Good morning. Happy Halloween.
And happy Halloween, Chris Vandercook. Well, you know, here we are. It's a Monday and it's Halloween. And if you're imagining a sigh bubble above my head as I'm talking, well, you may not be alone. For many families, Halloween will mean an early night of tricks or treats because it's a school and work night. And with the sugar shock from candy not immediately squirreled away by vigilant parents, it could be a long night of trying to get excited kids to bed, which could undercut the whole family experience. That's why, again this year, there's a push to declare the last Saturday in October as the official night of trick-or-treating. Joy Gillen wants it to happen. She's in our studio now. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. This has been going on for a long time, for about 17 years or so, that there's been a push to move the family part of Halloween, the trick-or-treating activity, to that last Saturday in October. And so far over these last 17 years, it hasn't been able to gain traction. Why do you think?
I think people think it's harder than it is to do this. An example would be Thanksgiving was just signed by Lincoln. It didn't have to go through Congress or the Senate. He just signed it. Same with Roosevelt when he decided to move it. They just signed it as presidents. It's called the executive order. So to do this, all we need is the president's signature. We don't need to go through Congress or the Senate. And it's becoming, we are dismissing the creativity and the ingenuity and the family involvement of Halloween. And we are also spending more money on Halloween than ever before.
We have $8 billion.
Yes, and last year it was $6 billion. Next year it'll probably be $10 billion. We're talking billion.
So you're hoping that President Obama, before he leaves office, will be able to do this in a way that other efforts have not been able to see fruition.
That's correct. Madam First Lady is involved in diabetes and Let's Move movement. And I think that's also a restriction on his thinking or his evaluation of it. But really, the candy isn't a part, so much a part of it than we realize. Obtaining as much candy as children can on Halloween night is a bragging right. They don't eat it all. They don't really care about the candy itself, since candy is all around us today.
And families have started to do more of the family costume idea and using this as a family time to go out and be together. I mean, that's part of
that's
of your
correct.
Point.
And we don't have that time on a Saturday. You have the whole day to involve your family, to come up with ideas. People don't realize it's almost like learning about engineering and mathematics because we are creating our own costumes. We also have the time to go out and visit our neighbors, visit our neighborhood without feeling invasive. Police officers that I speak to say their biggest problem is having people call up to knock on their neighbor's door to say, keep the music down, because they don't know their neighbor. And this is one of the ways to get to know your neighborhood.
For folks who say that, look, Halloween also is a religious holiday, and it's, All Hallows Eve, and then the next day is All Saints Day, that breaking that apart in some way might be something that would make them uncomfortable. How do you answer them?
Well, actually, the Catholic Church has already approved this. They approved it over 15 years ago to change it. All Hallows Day or Halloween was actually just smacked on the front side of All Souls Day to get the Celtics to become Catholics. It was a corporation move over 2,000 years ago. And also Halloween or trick-or-treat is a birthing from Halloween. Trick-or-treat is actually all American. Trick-or-treat did not exist in the Celtic world.
So given all that you've said so far, now there's a petition on We the People, another petition to make it move, but it has to be completed by the 10th of November with roughly 100,000 signatures to be able to make this viable. Where is it today? How many signatures do you have?
Oh, very few, because who I've been giving this out to is people that have smartphones, and this petition will only go through a computer. They want to make sure that it's valid. Your vote is valid. It's not a bogus, fake vote.
Signature.
Yeah. So what they've done is the White House has made sure that any vote that goes through must go through a computer, must go through your email. And people don't realize that. So they go on their smartphone looking for it and cannot find it. It's only on your computer.
So at this point, although this is now the latest move to do it, you've just said there are very few, it looks like this may not happen again.
I disagree, because we have Thanksgiving coming up. We can also be reminded that our presidents signed it.
But isn't this supposed to be done by the 10th of November?
That doesn't mean that the population doesn't subscribe to this.
Which is to say that you'll try it again next year?
No, I'll be pushing during the Thanksgiving, reminding them that Thanksgiving is bogus. Thanksgiving was just written by a woman after the Civil War.
Right, I understand that. But in terms of this petition and getting this in front of President Obama before he leaves office, that's pretty soon to happen. So if you want him to be able to sign it, don't you have to have this petition completed by the 10th of November?
We want it to, and we're hoping it to.
But is there an out date? If that's your want and hope date, is there a date by which he would have to have it?
Well,
I thought it was 30 days out.
It's 30 days out. We have 10 more days. If it doesn't fulfill itself, I'm going to turn around and push it again. But I'm really pushing for this president, because this is the open door. Presidents seem to traditionally have more people pardoned, more signatures signed on many different things because they're leaving office.
Well, we got to leave right now, but we'll be watching this and see what happens, Joy. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Joy Gillen is a home care nurse, and one of the reasons she says that she started the petition is because her niece has special needs.
This is The Conversation on member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. It's 8:15. Coming up, it's time to dim the lights and prepare to shiver. But first, your quiz.
O mau, o kahoolawe, o hawaii.
And in our backyard quiz, something that may make you shiver for a different reason. Now, in our conversation on Friday with the Kauai Endangered Seabird Recovery Project, it got us thinking about one of the species the project works to protect. Those birds spend most of their lives at sea, feed on small fish, squid, and crustaceans that they gather with a sort of tap dance motion on the surface of the water, scooping up their prey with their bills. The global population is estimated to be between 20 and 200,000, with only a few hundred birds left in Hawaii. They're not easy to study. They're too small to be reliably observed at sea, and on land they prefer to nest in remote high mountain areas. They're about a foot long, brownish-black in color, with a distinctive white band across the rump and a wingspan of just under 2 feet. This morning, we're looking for their English or Hawaiian name, and we'll be back with it in half an hour. You can call us at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer, and be the first to get it right, and an HPRT will wing its way to you.
Why do we take such delight in being frightened? It's a question that comes to mind, as it does every Halloween, and it remains a puzzlement. What's certain, though, is that every culture has its share of spooky stories. Weird sounds heard near the graveyard, things that go bump in the night, revenants. Jeff Geer is a longtime storyteller whose craft has taken him all over the world. He's accumulated a few weird tales along the way, and we asked him to come in and share one. Good morning, Jeff. As the door creaks open slowly.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jeff.
So, kids, if you're stuck in traffic, if you're just ambling towards the coffee machine, lean forward. Put your forehead on the radio, because we're about to go into So, I came to tell you a story. I think I'd like to tell it to you right now. Ready?
Always.
So, you know, I'm a storyteller, and you get gigs. I love libraries. They have themes for the summer. It was something like animals tell stories too. I don't know. I was like trying to find some stories, local stories. It was cockamamie. I didn't know. I was asking friends. Here's somebody you ought to call. She has a lot of local stories. Waimea Bay, go around the curve. She lives past Shark's Cove. I call her up. Eh, what you like? Spooky. I'm looking for stories. Seven telephone poles, she tells me. It's a dead end. The kids keep stealing the sign for the street. You'll find it. Okay, so I drive around Waimea Bay. I go past Shark's Cove. Seven telephone poles past the food land. I turn into this junk-a-lunk, beat-up little dead-end street. The roofs are sagging. The, you know, screens are beat up. There's a bunch of shoes. I knock the door. The door opens. This sharp-eyed old bat.
Yeah? What's your name?
Hi. I'm the storytelling guy. I came for a few stories. Da-da-da-da.
Yeah, come on in.
I walk in. The inside of this beat-up house is koa-lined. The table is a 12-feet koa table, calabashes you can literally bathe in. I'm in a museum. There's pictures of all the kings and queens with fresh Miley on the wall. I'm like, whoa.
That's okay. You like story?
She's kind of resistant. Her eyes are like pinning me, like, you know, I don't really
trust you.
Half an hour later, 45 minutes, we're laughing. An hour and a half later, I'm delighted with these stories I've heard. I'm walking towards the door. Chris, to tell you the truth, I don't remember anything that she told me because of what happened in the doorway. Oh, thank you, Auntie. That was so beautiful. Thank you for sharing stories.
Ah! It's only about you howly people. You know, they come around here, they like stories. I don't tell them nothing. But you got good heart. You know, Almakua.
I'm like, yeah. Relationships in your family that aren't human, sharks, owls, sometimes raw.
Yeah. You know what? Some about you holly people I never understand. Somebody die in your family, what you do? You buy some plot in some land some far away to put the dead one, and you never go. Us Hawaiians, we don't do that. We put him in the ground, right by the house.
Okay,
she says. My tutukane, I remember when he died. You think we put him in the field? Nah. We put him on the table, right here. Whole family come around, 2-3 days. We eat, we sleep, we laugh. Us kids go over and play with his eyes, say, hey, he's all cold. Stop touching him. Touch him, leave him alone. Fall asleep under the table, the body on top. It's okay. You dead, but you're still with us.
3 days later, uncle say, hey, that's okay. You know, pow, close him. Now, they don't build coffins during the day. They hammer the wood together at night. But during the day, okay, so the coffin's ready. They put the body in, and they take it outside, and they bury.
We don't bury him in the field. We put him in the yard, right in the back.
Bury the body, get in the car as the family disperses. She says, you know,
then the waves start to come from Shark's Cove. The waves come up and pounding on the ground, and wave coming, pounding on the ground. My daddy said, ew, the waves is getting big, huh? You know how the waves get in the North Shore. They get big like mountains and pounding and pounding. And the sun go down and the wind start to grow. And I can feel the wind and the wave and the water slapping on the building and slapping on the building and the pounding of the waves. Me and my sister grabbing each other saying, Daddy, Daddy, what's happening? He said, oh, maybe the wave's going to wash the house away. Oh, oh, oh. I say, that night I go to sleep, but in the wind and the waves and the rain is slapping on the windows, coming in the louvers, bleeding down the walls, and we can hear in the noise, I still hear. Me and my sister say, Tutu man, okay, you hear, but go away, you're freaking us out. My mom and daddy come in. We fall asleep on the same bed. In the morning, we wake up. Oh, my daddy moving. We all get up. We go outside. We open the front door. The store you're in now. Oh, everything busts up. The car was in front of the house. Not in front of the house. The road, no road. Palm tree, no palm tree. Hibiscus gone. And everything out in the road is a cross. And laying across the road, all bus up. My daddy go outside. He look where stay the grave. The sand gone, top of the coffin, all bus up. And the body gone, only water. And my daddy feel in the coffin, he pull up from the wood. One thing, another thing, he say, hey, you kids, come over here, look at this. And in his hand, he got the teeth of the shark. The shark. He say, you kids know this, that our family part live in the sea. And when Tutu lit Kane in the ground, they ride in on the waves. The sharks come in and take her home. I'm like, you mean the sharks came in to take Tutu Kane home? She says, you howdy people. You just walking on the surface of the face of things. This is at the root of what is true for the people who've been here from the beginning of time. I went in my car and I started to cry. I thought, a family includes sharks that take Tutu Kane back home to the sea. I'm so lucky. I live in Hawaii. I am so lucky.
Jeff Geer is a storyteller and a frequent guest on The Conversation when he's not traveling the world. You can watch a video of his ghost story on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
And after that, back to some reality. Now, getting good information often comes at a cost. For the investigation of Hawaii's Arizona prisoners, Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair now has a reality check about the not-so-public records they were after and the $23,000 cost. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
Okay, we've talked about this in several reality checks in terms of what information has come out of this so far, but going back to February and a records request that you put in that you're now told is going to cost $23,000, how can that be when these are supposed to be public records?
Right. In fact, there's a state law that requires this, that government agencies have 10 business days to respond and tell us, well, you want those records? Here's how much they're going to cost, or they have to at least give a reason why they're going to deny that. Well, as you know, Louis Kanea has been covering the Saguaro prison situation for a long time, and it's amazing. We spend tens of millions of dollars to house 1,400 prisoners in Arizona. It's been going on for 25 years, and yet we can't get a simple records request honored without a lot of hassle. He asked back in February for information about how they treat their prisoners, policies, use of violence. Here it is now, 8 months later, and we have very little to show for it, and a tab of $23,000.
So what happened when you met with the Department of Public Safety? Weren't you working with Shelley Nobrega?
Absolutely. Louis was working carefully with her to try and refine the focus of the request to make it easier for DPS, Department of Public Safety, to provide this information. Remember, we hire a private company, Corrections Corporation of America, a correctional corporation, and we pay them to house our prisoners. But it doesn't appear that DPS has a very good idea of all the things that go on. For example, why have three prisoners from Hawaii been murdered over the last 5 or 6 years? Can't we find out more information? We are being frustrated in trying to find out this stuff.
And any solution on the horizon?
I don't know. I know that Louis will keep at this, and we feel this is very important. Not only is it our taxpayer dollars, there is a matter of justice here, and it is a matter of law. This is something that should be allowed. The ACLU said, you know, this is a roadblock to transparency. So we're going to keep at it, and we'll keep you posted.
The reality check is it's not over yet.
That's it.
Thanks very much, Chad. Talk to you in the morning.
Thanks, Beth.
Chad Blair joins us every day from Civil Beat with a reality check. What exactly are the working conditions of foreign fishermen employed by Hawaii's longline fleet? Well, we've heard a lot about them, along with legal questions about their licensing. Pastor Jerry Saludes doesn't care much about the legal questions. He and the members of the Waipio Community Baptist Church in Waipahu focus on ministering to the many men they have come to know over the past 2 years. We talk late on Friday about whether he and his parishioners have heard firsthand accounts that sync with the news reports.
Initially, whatever they tell us or whatever we hear with regard to the news report, I think I'm reacting to that from an American point of view, meaning If you talk about their wages, if you talk about their working conditions, I'm thinking about, okay, that may be difficult. But then on the other hand, I'm thinking from their point of view, that's okay. For example, if you think of how much they earn, we're thinking that is a small amount. But again, if you flip the coin and think in their terms, let's just say $700, multiply that by 50 pesos to a dollar, that's a lot of money in the Philippines. So it's a matter of perspective. And when they signed up for the job, pretty much I think they understand what the risks are. They understand what the conditions are. Let me say it this way. As a pastor, and we have actually adopted them, and in Hawaiian we say hanai, right? We
right.
take them as family because they don't have family here. We're their family here. We don't hear them complain, not the way that we read on the papers. I've never heard them complain on those areas.
Are they afraid that they might lose their jobs if they do?
I don't think so. Because, well, I'm talking about Filipinos only because there are Vietnamese, there are Indonesians. But for the Filipino guys, we don't even talk about it. If they ever talk about anything that they're not receiving, it would be like if and when they get sick, they may not be able to go to a doctor right away. That's why we responded to that by asking some of our doctor friends if they can come to the pier and give free medical clinic. Those are just the things that they talk about. Just like in any workplace, there are some people that you can't get along with. If the captain is not that good to them, they're not really complaining. They'll just say, oh, captain does not, you know, deal with us well. But that's not a big one. And with the, what, 140 vessels here licensed in Hawaii, maybe just a handful would have that kind of problem. A lot of them, they're okay.
When you said a little earlier that when you have heard the reports and read the articles, that you react both as an American and as someone from the Philippines in understanding what some of these conditions would mean for them in terms of what they can earn, what their earning power is. Mm-hmm. Some would say in listening to that, that kind of means that we're looking at this perhaps with situational ethics or situational legalities. We hear from certain attorneys who I'm sure you've read as well who say that they're legally not being well represented and that, in fact, Hawaii is not complying with certain laws. But is there anything to indicate when you talk to any of the men on the 40 boats that you and your parishioners have adopted, is there anything to suggest that they have been in situations where they have not really understood what they're signing on for and that some of these things that we hear may or may not be the situation that they're experiencing?
With the 40 adopted boats that we have, no, nothing. They all know what it is. They all know how much they will receive, what they expect from the boats. Like I said, we never hear them complain about those.
So at this point, as people continue to feel, you know, a sense of horror at what they read in the papers and what they've heard and the way these stories have moved around the world, there are eyes now on Hawaii in some very unflattering ways, looking at how do we not treat these people with a little bit more humanity. But for the people who are, you know, looking at this and saying, isn't there a better way? We've heard from Chef Nico, for example, that there was a plan to create a better place for them that would have showers and laundry facilities and a place to be able to play maybe a basketball court. Have you heard anything about this plan?
Yes. Actually, we were very excited about it when we heard it because we have been praying, really. Right now, our understanding is they're not even supposed to step out of the boat onto the pier. Legally speaking.
Yes, that's what we've been told, because that means that they're now setting foot into the United States and could be potentially deported.
Right. But I think our aloha spirit has just allowed them to walk around as long as they don't come out of the gate. The wider area in the fishing village allows them to walk around, ride a bike, and now that we have been given permission to set up for our dinner fellowships on the grassy area, that allows us to play ball and all that. Now, that exact area, the grassy area, is where they plan to put up the multi-purpose building or recreational hall. And I even suggested, can I bring my ping pong table? Can I bring a pool table? You know, can we have a strong Wi-Fi connection? Because that, if there is any complaint that the fishermen have, it's communication to family. And Wi-Fi connection is very poor.
As you look forward to continuing the same kind of program, what is it that you think that other people in Hawaii, in particular those in Honolulu, might do to ease the situation for these fishermen as all of these other legal issues and perhaps construction issues continue? They're still going to be coming in and out of port. What can people do to help them?
I would wish they would join us in adopting a boat. These guys have become family to us. I mean, they call me dad, my wife, they call mom. A couple of missionaries we have from England are seniors, so they're grandpa, grandma already, you know. And it's beautiful the way we have established the connection with them. For us, before, when they come back from fishing after, 3 weeks, there's nothing to do, nobody to meet them at the pier. So what do while they're waiting? Drink and sit around. Now, if they are 5 miles out coming in and they have signal on their cell phones, they call us. We ask them, what would you want for dinner? You know, home-cooked meals. My wife, the ladies in our church, they'd cook. We meet them at the pier, have dinner with them, talk stories. We, as a church, have had a desire in our hearts to bless these guys. Guess what? After having time of fellowship with them, we all go home, we feel more blessed. God has just done double time on that. You know, it's like, this is so cool that these guys who never smiled before or who never laughed are laughing with us. We're making jokes. I can speak several dialects, so I can turn to any one of them, and just hearing their dialect from among us, new friends, new families, it's amazing. It's just a blessing to see that.
Very much the simple things, the simple human things that you're connecting with.
Yeah.
Pastor Jerry, thank you so much for spending a little time with us, and I hope your program continues and that you all feel quite blessed.
Aloha, Beth Ann.
Jerry Saludas is pastor of Waipio Community Baptist Church in Waipahu. The church spearheaded the Seafarers Ministry. It began in September 2014, and to date they've adopted 40 boats of the 140 vessels licensed in Honolulu. They have regular dinner fellowship with their adopted seafarers at the grassy area of Pier 36 on Tuesdays and Fridays.
Happy Halloween. This is Eric Azadorian, and you're listening to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio.
Helping people.
It made me feel good.
Taking care of
people. It's just something that you want.
I wanted to help.
Hi, everyone. This is Bob Wehrman. It's time for The Benevolent Mind, our quest to discover the spark that ignites giving. I knew a man who was a prankster all his life. Even after death, he led people on wild adventures seeking gold he said he'd buried. Turns out, he was having one on us from beyond the grave. Jokes and legacy giving aside, there is something you can do for the community after your death. You can donate your body to the John A. Burns School of Medicine's Willed Body Program. They'll use your remains to further medical students' understanding of anatomy. The med students are incredibly respectful of the people from whom they've learned. They call them their silent teachers. Many people give their bodies to further medical knowledge, but there is a continuous need for more because new students enter the school each year. If you wish, you can still be an organ donor, and the school will cover the costs of cremating your remains. Best of all, your donation may save untold numbers of lives because of what you taught a student doctor. Our program is a production of Hawaii Public Radio and is sponsored by the Hawaii Community Foundation, believing for 100 years that philanthropy is all about you.
Stargazer Time, our weekly look at what's happening in the massive universe around our very small planet. And as usual, we get the expertise of Christopher Phillips for our report. Hey, Christopher, welcome back. What's going on this week?
Hey, Dave. It's good to be here. For this week's Stargazers, look out for the pairing of Venus and Saturn in the evening sky. They both set pretty early at 8 o'clock. Now, the moon this week will be getting slightly brighter in our evening skies, but we will still be treated to beautiful dark skies perfect for stargazing.
A space journey from the 70s in the news again.
Yes, we are revisiting the Viking landers, the first spacecraft to land on the surface of Mars. And they accomplished this back in 1976. They introduced us to Mars in incredible detail. They took fantastic images of the red planet, and they also conducted an experiment to look for life in Martian soil. Now, initially, this experiment produced a positive result, and it stunned scientists. But repeated experiments were mysteriously negative. And now scientists are calling for a revisitation of the Viking lander experiment, as they believe they may have in fact discovered signs of life on the Martian surface.
And so refresh us, Christopher.
So the Viking landers were equipped with robotic arms that were able to dig into the Martian soil and then scoop that soil into a mobile laboratory located on the probe. Now during this experiment, the Martian soil tested positive for a metabolism, a sign that on Earth would almost certainly suggest the presence of life. However, a related experiment found no trace of organic material. But in the 40 years since we conducted the experiments, we've learned a great deal more about the red planet, including signs of water under the Martian soil.
And so it's the discovery of the water that's prompting people to go back and revisit this experiment from 76.
It is indeed. In 1976, we thought Mars was barren and essentially dead, with no real interesting chemistry in the soil, let alone the presence of liquid water. But now, observations from spacecraft and measurements by ground-based landers have shown that Mars is in fact very much alive, geologically speaking.
I know one spacecraft that's not contributing a whole lot to that.
Unfortunately, the Schiaparelli probe, due to teach us even more about Mars, was lost last week.
Well, that'll be one for people who are eventually venturing to Mars, kind of like coming across a shipwreck or something.
It will indeed.
Christopher Phillips, thank you so much.
You are welcome, Dave.
And I'm Dave Lawrence. We'll catch you next week.
Support for Stargazer comes from Ferraro Choi, providing environmentally sustainable architecture, interior design, and research for projects throughout Hawaii and the Pacific. FerraroChoi.com.
One of the best ways to stay healthy is to keep moving. But what can you do when your hips, knees, ankles, and back are stiff or in pain, even when all you did was get out of bed in the morning? I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Join me today on The Body Show. We'll talk with an expert about the latest in joint care, injections, supplements, and more. That's today at 5 on The Body Show.
In today's backyard quiz, we thought about an endangered seabird that nests in higher elevations on Kauai when it's not foraging at sea. At sea, it dances along the surface, ruining the days of unwary squid, small fish, and crustaceans. It's brownish-black in color with a white band across its rump. That's its most distinctive feature. One of the concerns of the Kauai Endangered Seabird Recovery Project is the number of fledglings of this species that get drawn off course on their way to the sea by bright artificial lights near the shoreline. The project has enlisted the help of Kauai school children in restoring the fledglings to the wild. The federal government lists this bird as a candidate for endangered species listing, but here in Hawaii, it's considered an endangered species. Its Hawaiian name is Akeake, and it's also known as the band-rumped storm petrel.
And Heidi Ingram called us from Kaloa, Kauai, knew the answer, and we'll be getting the T-shirt. If you've got a quiz for us, you can always send it in to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. It's now 8:47.
Time was not that long ago when Hawaii's people were much discussed in the media without necessarily being asked to take part in the discussion. That has changed dramatically in recent decades to the point where Hawaiian media makers have banded together to identify their shared concerns and look at ways their influence in the community and in the market can continue to grow. Leanne Ferrer is the executive director of Pacific Islanders and Communications, organizers of the 2016 Hawaiian Media Makers Conference, which will be held in Honolulu on Wednesday. And she's with us this morning. Good morning, Leanne.
Good morning, Chris, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Why was it important for you to identify along, you know, ethnic cultural lines like this?
It was important to the Hawaiian Media Makers that as the representatives of our host culture, mm-hmm. that we band together and get the message out to all media makers doing business in Hawaii that we have a responsibility to authentically represent our aina and the Hawaiian culture.
If you went back a few decades and looked at the way Hawaiians were represented in media, you might cringe a little, yeah?
We do. We do look back to remind ourselves and to see where we can better representation. It's always lessons learned and move forward from two decades ago.
Well, one of the ways to better represent yourself is to just be heard from, right?
Definitely. The more we are able to speak with our own voices and speak our own truth, the more authentic it is. There will always be people telling our stories, mm-hmm. but as long as they have advisors or they seek authentic representation, the better for all of us.
The fact that others will be telling your story isn't necessarily a harmful thing, right?
If they do it I hate to say the correct way, but if they do it with proper representation, then I don't see it as harmful. And that's what we are trying to get the word out, that you do want to tell the stories correctly.
Mm-hmm. So how can you bring that about?
Well, one way is to really do research on your story, your character, whatever storytelling you are doing. And then another way is to seek a cultural advisor, to seek other knowledgeable individuals within the culture to just make sure that it is a correct representation.
So how would that manifest itself? You know, say I'm coming to Hawaii to make a movie about, and that it touches on Hawaiian history. What should I do to be correct, as you say?
Oh, that's a terrific question. And one of the first things I hope everyone does is call in an email to the Hawaii State Film Office. Mm-hmm. Our Hawaii Film Commissioner, Donnie Dawson, is the perfect example of a person who can advise and help walk you through those cultural questions that mm-hmm. you have.
Because I don't think many come here looking to give offense, right?
No, definitely not. And that is the reason why we feel we need to be more visible now, so that people know there is cultural protocol. There is the correct way of doing things. Because otherwise people come in and they don't know.
You know, I'm reminded of a recent kerfuffle over a Halloween costume, in fact. right, from an animated Disney movie.
Yes.
Tell me that story, if you would.
So the most recent Disney princess movie, Moana, put out Halloween costumes just a few months ago. And one of the costumes was depicting the demigod Maui. And it was actually a shirt that had Maui's tattoos on them. And it was brown in color and almost mesh. So people were saying it's as if Disney is selling skin.
Yeah.
That they're encouraging people skin.
You know, we had a discussion about that at the time on this show with a friend of mine who's a student of how African-American culture is portrayed in the media. And, you know, what we both said is you wouldn't dare do that today with black people. But Hollywood does seem to sort of move on. If they find out it's offensive to one culture, they just sort of seem to move on to another until they're set straight.
It seems that they don't look at the mistake spanning across all cultures, mm-hmm. or all ethnicities. It is, we made a mistake with this one. Now we will turn our attention to another.
Yes. And it's almost like, well, we got to find somebody to mock, and we just find somebody who isn't going to give us a hard time about it.
Exactly. And percentage-wise, Pacific Islanders have a smaller percentage within the U.S., and therefore a smaller voice.
So you folks being a counter to that, right?
Yes. The Hawaiian Media Makers Conference helps bring together all Hawaiian media makers, Pacific Island media makers, and media makers doing business in Hawaii. And together we form a louder voice.
So you don't need to be Hawaiian to take part in this?
Not at all. Everyone is welcome. And we feel, like we had discussed earlier, the more people know about issues with protocol and culture, the better.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you move forward, you also have, you know, there's a business component to this, right? You folks are in business. So how do you go about sort of promoting that aspect?
Well, the conference also talks about sustainability of mm-hmm. our industry, the media industry. We are talking anywhere from radio, television, writing, et cetera. And we talk about funding, distribution, continuing on, doing the things we love and creating what we want, but finding a way to make a living off of it.
You've been making a living in media in Hawaii for how long now?
I've been in media for 30 years now. I started as a technician in television, and now I'm an arts administrator.
Did you see many people who looked like you when you started?
Not at all. It was very rare, not only with my gender, but also with my ethnicity as a Hawaiian. I do see more now, but I also feel I had to look for people and create my own group to see other like-minded and like-looking individuals.
Well, you know, just getting back to the idea that the conference is open to all, it's kind of, if it weren't, that wouldn't be very Hawaiian, would it?
Yes, not at all. We are very inclusive, and that extends out to the conference as well.
Well, I hope that you have a productive time, Leanne, and thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Leanne Ferrer is the Executive Director of Pacific Islanders and Communications, organizers of the 2016 Hawaiian Media Makers Conference, which will be held all day Wednesday at the Ala Moana Hotel in Honolulu. These days, Beth Ann, Halloween has moved away from the spooky to the more macabre, you know, the living dead, the whole, it's troubling to me in a way, the preoccupations that you see in the costumes that we see.
And for kids, you know, who see some of this stuff too, this has moved away from the fun of going out and doing trick-or-treating and being dressed up as a ghost or a witch. I mean, all the traditional stuff that, yeah. you know, we see even watching It's a Great, you know, The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, that kind of sweetness that surrounds Halloween and the fun of all of that with a lot of focus on. And there can be some sweetness in this, too, of looking at, you know, the Day of the Dead and a lot of the activities around that, too. But that's not exactly, I think, what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking more about this old Walking Dead zombie preoccupation.
Now, sometimes you and I both feel like the Walking Dead, but that's another matter.
That's right.
For the moment, we hope you're going to have a safe and happy Halloween. And come back with us tomorrow morning. We're going to talk about closing the justice gap with an online pro bono service. Michelle Acosta, the executive director of the Volunteer Legal Services of Hawaii, will join us.
And we'll get a look inside the local jazz fusion band, Adagio.
We like to hear from you, and you can always be in touch anytime you like on our talkback line. That number is 808-792-8217. Please be sure to leave your name, your full name, and the city from which you're calling. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org or post comments on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation or tweet us at HI Conversation or at BKOZHPR.
And if you missed any of this show or want to hear a past show recorded, you can find them on the Conversation page along with links to information about guests and topics. Just look under Talk Shows for the Conversation on HawaiiPublicRadio.org. I'm Chris Vanderkirk.
I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. We'll see you in the morning with more of The Conversation.